Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days. I mean, days
I feel like the waterfall of thoughts. Every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala New York Podcast.
Yes, and welcome to episode 113 of the podcast. I am Dave, your host. As always, the fall is here. There is a chill in the air. The leaves are beginning to turn, perhaps, depending on where you are in the world. And we are a month out, just about, a little over a month out from our presidential election. You might have heard about it from time to time. Maybe you've heard so much about it that you're freaking out a little bit. And you wouldn't be the only person. So perhaps today's topic on unconditional confidence might be a little applicable. David Perrin is our teacher today. This is a talk he gave at our weekly Dharma gathering back in late July. And David Perrin, as you know, is a regular contributor to the podcast. He will actually be teaching a live workshop at the New York Shambhala Center on the evening of Wednesday, October 26th, called Learn to Live in the Moment. So if you like what you hear today, you can check out that event, Learn to Live in the Moment, the evening of October 26th. Also, if you're looking for something a little bit more in-depth, that same weekend, October 28th, 29th, and 30th, is our Shambhala Training Level 1 weekend. That's our introductory meditation training weekend. It's called Feel Human Again, Shambhala Training Weekend 1. It's being taught by Lodro Rinzler, another contributor to the podcast. And again, that's happening the weekend of October 28th. For more information and to register for either of those programs, go to ny.shambhala.org, click Classes and Programs, and check out our menu of classes, weekend retreats, workshops, and come see our weekly Dharma gathering in person, where you can hear talks like this, live. And so, without any further ado, here is David Perrin talking about unconditional confidence. Unconditional confidence?
That doesn't necessarily mean that I know what confidence is, or that I have so much confidence that I could just spread it out. And actually, as I was thinking about talking about this tonight, I'm hoping that we can really have a discussion, because I'm going to share some things that the Dharma, the teachings, have to say about confidence. But I really, and I've been having some conversations with people recently in anticipation of this talk, asking folks what they think about confidence. And also the notion of what we're going to talk about tonight, unconditional confidence. And they've given me some really good answers and stuff that I hadn't thought of before, and it sort of took this question deeper for me. So I hope that our conversation tonight, ideas that you all have, can take this notion of confidence into perhaps a new terrain for you. So let's start with this idea of confidence. So you could say conventionally, or sort of the definition or the understanding of confidence that many of us are used to, has to do with some type of, it's something that arises in us that has to do with some type of feedback with the world, right? So that feedback can come from another person, another human being. It can also arise just when we're on our own. And it often happens in these circumstances where if we do something, you could say positive, we do something well or something helpful, then the person we may feel within ourselves, hey, I did a good job, I feel good about myself. Or we may get that feedback from another person. And sometimes it's not even positive feedback. Sometimes it could be negative feedback. Someone could say, well, you know, let's say it's my father, and you know, and I come to the dinner table, you know, dressed like barely wearing an old T-shirt, or I'm going to go out, and he says, "Why are you dressed like that? You look like a slouch." And I think to myself, "Well, exactly. You are always wearing a coat and tie. This is the way I want it. So I'm differentiating myself. So actually, thank you for that feedback, because now I feel like I've done what I wanted to do." There's another story that just happened to me recently this summer. So my family, my partner's family, my in-laws go to northern Michigan, to a part of Michigan that's on Lake Michigan, Little Traverse Bay. And we go there during this summer, particularly, usually we go in July. And so my son's birthday often falls during the time where we're there. And so I'm up there, I don't have a lot to do, so I figure, you know, even though I don't cook a lot and I don't bake ever, I figure I'm going to make him a birthday cake. So 2 years I made it, 2 years ago I made him this birthday cake, which was like this amazing, I saw it online, and it was, I had this idea because we do a lot of like weenie roasts and fire pit stuff up there in northern Michigan. So I thought, oh, I'm going to make him a fire pit cake. So this cake was round and it was about this high and it was lined with little different pieces of fudge, which were meant to be the rocks that made up this fire pit. And then I melted down pieces of candy to make these fake little red flames. And I gave all the kids little pretzel rods and tiny marshmallows on them so that they could pretend it was pretty cool. You know, it didn't taste particularly great. It was way too rich, but it looked, I mean, it was like made the rounds on Instagram. So this summer, I his favorite place to go, one of his favorite places to go up there is Pirates Cove Mini Golf. So I figured I'm going to make him a replica of Pirates Cove, the mini golf course. So I made all the little mini golf course holes, and I made the little pond, and I ordered this pirate ship online and these little pirates and decorated the cake. Again, it was like this big hit. Made the rounds on Instagram, and all the kids and even some of the parents were like, "Oh, you should open your own dessert store. This is so great. You did such a great job." And I felt so good. It was so touching to me to have their recognition and their acknowledgement. And I felt connected, you know, I felt connected to my family. My son was beaming, you know, here he is at a table with all his friends and his cousins, and his dad made him this big birthday cake. So there's something really genuine and not contrived about the feeling that I was deriving from the feedback, the praise that I got for making this birthday cake in the form of a miniature golf course. And I felt confident. I felt like I belonged. So that's conditional confidence. So what's unconditional confidence? And first, maybe we should pause for a second and talk about just what is confidence. What does actually the mean word, the word mean? So the word means to have or with, con, with. And then the root is phido, so trust or reliance or faith. So you have trust in something. You have faith, or you rely upon something. So when I was asking some of my family and friends about unconditional confidence, they had some interesting things to say. And one person said that it actually, unconditional confidence is the type of confidence that is, it doesn't have anything to do with the feedback that you get from the world. So it's not dependent on someone telling you that you did a good job, someone giving you praise. It's independent of that. It arises without reference point to the opinions of others. Another person that I asked said that unconditional confidence has to do with being able to be with whatever comes up. So this is particularly where we start to get into this idea of meditation as a practice ground for unconditional confidence, because in meditation, obviously, we're not getting very much feedback. We might be thinking, having thoughts about past experiences, or things that people have said to us, or anticipating what someone might say to us based on what kind of job we do. But mostly, it's just us being quiet on the cushion, and there are different states of mind, different emotions, different thoughts that are coming up. And so this person was saying that unconditional confidence means that we are not at the whim or the mercy of the ups and downs, the positives and the negatives. We can hold our seat. We can remain with our own mind. We can remain with our experience no matter what happens, no matter what thoughts come into our mind about what a good person we are or what a not so good person we are. We can be, we can hang with all of that. And then one other person said something really interesting, which was that they experience, and this is a meditator, and she was saying she experiences unconditional confidence when she can find some perspective in her life, when she can step back and there's a sense of space, spaciousness, perspective. You might think of it as kind of like big mind versus the small mind or ego mind. So this big mind, she steps back, she sees the bigger perspective. It's kind of like when you look up at the stars at night and you realize, well, you know, you have a sense of perspective of the size and scope of our lives in relationship to the universe. And that allows her to feel a sense of relaxation. Because she realizes that whatever she was so focused on or hooked into is not such a big deal. She's been able to step back and see the bigger picture. Now again, like I mentioned, meditation and the practice of meditation, right? You can see how that's like such a great experimental ground, testing ground for developing this unconditional confidence. We're sitting here with our breath, with our mind, with our bodies, things are coming up, and we come back to the breath, and we do that recursively. We do that over and over and over. And over time, those of you who have done meditation for a while, one of the things that people experience is that this unconditional confidence arises. This confidence that our inherent wakefulness, our inherent, what we call basic goodness, or our basic nature of sanity, of sense of peace, stability, clarity, these qualities of our nature, which do get sometimes obscured and covered over and diluted or confused, but those are the basic qualities of who we are as beings. All beings share these qualities. And we touch into them, and they're not conditional, right? They didn't they're without cause. Those qualities have always been there, they always will be there. And in Buddhism, we don't necessarily spend a lot of time looking for the etiology or the source or the causation of things, because we say that basically, there's this sense of primordialness or beginninglessness, you know, that we can't really know where things began. So if you give yourself over to that mystery, you can begin to, and you begin to develop some trust and confidence in these basic qualities of wakefulness, decency, sanity, that those are the qualities that emerge in our practice. Those moments of feeling settled, sane, stable, it naturally bubbles up because that's what we're made of. And so that's the unconditional confidence. So, but here's my question for you. Not to compare them, but let's compare them. Conditional confidence and unconditional confidence. Is one more important than the other? Is one more pure or better? Because I'll go back to, and I want you to actually ponder this, and in a sec I'll ask anyone who would like to reflect on this. and share, to please share. But I want to go back to this idea that the feeling that I had after I made the birthday cake, and the feeling that any of us have had when we receive some positive feedback and we're acknowledged, where someone really sees us for doing something, there's a feeling that arises there that I think is, as I said before, I think it's very genuine. And I think it matters, and I think it actually has a relationship or a correlation to unconditional confidence. But that's my question. What is the correlation, or is there a correlation? Are the two, can they not be correlated? Are they distinct experiences that don't have anything to do with each other? You know, when you're around kids, I don't know if you have kids or you're around kids, but the kids are like 3, 4, 5 years old. Have you ever had this experience that they're the best? Whenever they do something, they're like, I'm the best at that. I can do that. I'm great at that. No problem. Yeah, I've been known to be awesome at that. But what's really interesting then, so that's kind of this, and then that changes as they develop and grow up and start comparing themselves to other kids. But what's interesting is that as they're saying that they're the best at it, and it's very honest that they're, the way they express this, they're also looking for your acknowledgement. They're looking for me to say, yeah, you are pretty good at that. Or, yeah, you're good. You try this. You could use some work. Whatever it is, they just want to be seen. So we all want to be seen. And sometimes being seen can get a bad rap in Buddhism, right? Because it's associated with development of ego, and then all of a sudden ego takes over, and that's actually the source in Buddhism, right? Often attachment and ego are the source of our problems. That's what the teachings say. And yet, this moment of acknowledgement, of feeling connected to another human being, that's an important developmental milestone. It's important, I would argue, for every single one of us in this room to have some experience of that. So what do you think? Which type of confidence do you believe in? Are you familiar with? Please.
Is it working? Everybody can hear me? Yeah. So from what I kind of got from what you were talking about is, and from what experience I have with Buddhism in my own past, is that in the world that we live in, there's a lot of duality. And I think we can look at this from that sort of coin, right? That these can really be two sides of the same coin. And when we have unconditional confidence, that comes from ourselves and within. And this conditional confidence seems to be dependent on the other person in the situation. But if we look at it from their perspective, it's confidence within that other person. So I would be putting confidence in you, my own confidence within you, to guide me through meditation, possibly. That's why I sort of think it's the same thing. It's sort of a flow between both. And if we look at it, there's positive and negative flow between both, and that can go either way.
It can go either way, because of what I was thinking that is that if you put your confidence in me and you share that with me, so that then my sense of confidence is based on your positive feedback that, oh, yeah, you taught me, you did a good job. But then am I in danger? Because what if you take that away?
Well, like you said, the definition that we're working from is it comes from trust, right? And I think that's something as adults that we find very difficult, is to be vulnerable in that aspect. And that's where, like you're saying, children have such an easy ability to be confident, because they haven't developed these social inhibitors to be concerned with those things. So by being that level of that vulnerability also invites more confidence.
Ah, interesting. So
by being relaxed and open, and something I think a lot of confidence comes from is being aware of your own tension And by releasing that tension, it opens you up to be more confident within yourself and to invite the confidence of others.
So vulnerability is a key ingredient to having a genuine confidence or a...
Which I think scares a lot of people.
It scares me.
Yeah, and I don't think many people nowadays where it's so easy to close yourself off, or if you feel uncomfortable, you pick up your phone and close yourself off instead of trying to open yourself up to that interaction and that invitation, that real connection that's between, you know, all the people in this room and between you and I.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. That's wonderful. Thanks. Other thoughts? Yes, please.
Hello. I'm a teacher, so I think of a lot of Buddhist teachings and analogies to what I do kind of in the classroom. And when I think of the difference between conditional confidence and unconditional confidence, I sort of try to relate it to the idea that it's my job as a teacher and it's the job of educational systems to teach kids to want to learn how to learn. But in order to be able to do that, they have to sort of have... They need a teacher there to be able to be like, yes, you are capable of learning, you are capable of mastering new skills, and the idea is that they ultimately internalize the confidence of other people to be able to develop their own confidence in themselves. I'm doing a project now where I'm rereading all my diaries since I was 14, and like I would eventually like to write a letter to my 14-year-old self being like, it's going to be okay, but I think part of it is that it's the idea that you do have to taste conditional confidence from time to time, and I think it's important to see it come and go, and that sort of, you learn, it's the same idea that eventually you lose the guru because life becomes your guru, and so it's, you need that conditional confidence, you know, that loving gaze of other people, and then you learn to find it within yourself.
So that's great, because this is one of the conversations I was having in anticipation of tonight, and this idea that it's modeled for you, you have the gaze of someone else, so we sort of learn how to do it for ourselves based on those examples or what we receive. Now, so I'm a therapist, I work in the schools, and I particularly work with traumatized children, and I imagine that in your career you may have encountered some children who have had so few examples of that in their lives that... there can be all sorts of manifestations behaviorally of when someone has been, and a human being has been disregarded. And then there's the levels of abuse and other things that can be put on top of that. But so then the question becomes, if we don't have those models, and if the students never have a teacher like you, can they discover unconditional confidence?
I feel like in situations like that, I mean, part of me is inclined to say no, because I feel like there are a lot of people in the world who don't ever find unconditional confidence, but then there's some people who, for fate or for some other reason, decide to read their lives in such a way that life becomes their teacher. They find some way of relating to the pain and finding their own sort of narrative for it, that they kind of take a different route entirely than those of us that are fortunate to have people who, actual human beings, physical, so on and so forth, that are able to give us that kind of positive feedback.
So it is possible.
I think it is, but I think it's a lot more difficult.
It's more difficult, but it is possible. And does that then, is that sort of evidence for this unconditional nature of it, that it's actually like, if there is someone out there who has never had the positive attunement or acknowledgement, that is a possibility for them? It's not...
Well, I've been thinking, like, if you look at, for example, like, the Book of Job or something like that, and if you want to take, you know, a Buddhist point of view on it, the fact that he's able to, if we're going to say, you know, basic goodness is our essential principle, the fact that he's still able to live and the fact that he's still able to, you know, feel and interact with the sensory world after that, that in and of itself is amazing, right? And so, I mean, if you're in the mindset to interpret your experience in such a way, I think that would be, it's like if you hit rock bottom, the fact that you're still there is cause enough for confidence.
Okay, good.
Thank you. As I'm listening, a couple of ideas or definitions come to me, which the first one being that I think maybe unconditional confidence has something to do with being able to be totally, being able to be a total being while feeling lonely. Mm. Granted, the word total is, you know, has a lot of baggage, maybe. But and then the other thing that came to me was the quote from Trungpa Rinpoche of that the essence of warriorship is that we don't give up on anybody or anything. So if maybe to unpack that, like, I think that our culture tends to hold conditional confidence as the sort of key to confidence. And I think as a result of that, I've always had kind of like a knee-jerk negative reaction to the word confidence, mm-hmm. because it has mm-hmm. to do with, like as I was raised to see it, building up the ego of being dependent, as you've been talking about, on the external validation of another person.
Yeah.
And in fact, I've also experienced, in retrospect, I think a hindrance to practicing, like to meditation practice, experienced conditional confidence as in some way a hindrance or a challenge to my really? Practice, in the sense of that if I'm dependent on, I've noticed myself at certain moments of practicing being dependent on some kind of reward or some mm-hmm. kind of feeling or just kind of indication that I'm on the right path somehow. And then the flip side of that is the condition of feeling like sort of lethargic and completely doubtful and in the energy of just, you know, this isn't worth it. Nothing's happening right now. This is, I should just stop this for 5 months or, you know, just sort of spiraling down into like, I'm not getting any concrete validation. So I'm going to, why even bother, you know, and along with that, why even bother getting up early or getting out of bed or all that kind of stuff. So I'm thinking that unconditional confidence has more to do with trust, and why I say like being okay with being lonely is, it's really hard to do. And I definitely am not there even close to mastering it, but like being able to be with not having that validation or not having that source of like, I'm doing the right thing, but just being able to be there and proceed anyway. And that it has more to do with trust. Like I like that root of the word trust, as opposed to like, not just like bulking up or building up the self-image, but it has to do with trusting the full situation or the total situation. And that also, but also that idea about warriorship, about not giving up, about trusting and not giving up.
Yeah.
It makes me think about like just everything socially, politically going on today. And I just feel like if I give up on myself or if I just feel in my own situation, like why even bother, then that must also hold true for that also must have a ripple effect socially. So I feel like unconditional confidence has something to do with, you know, sort of refusing to a sort of boundless optimism or refusing to just say, why even bother?
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's, thank you very much. And so for those, so you mentioned, tell me your name.
Nate.
So Nate mentioned Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, who is this gentleman on my right. He's the founder of the Shambhala Centers and has written many books. He's now deceased. And his son, Sakyam Mipham Rinpoche, is the current lineage holder of this tradition. But yeah, I think many of these things you said really resonate with me and this idea of loneliness. So now so far we have vulnerability. We have loneliness as a key ingredient to developing, to being able to relate to loneliness and be with loneliness. And I would add to loneliness kind of this quality of a sad and tender heart, a brokenheartedness, that when we find ourselves in life or in our practice coming up against these feelings of loneliness, vulnerability, tenderheartedness or sadness, these are actually, they're you could say, indicators or signs that we're on the right path, according to the Buddhist philosophy, right? These, when we touch into those things and we don't run away and we don't give up on ourselves and we don't therefore give up on others, that's the moment where we can begin to say, oh, this practice is really sinking in with me. Because you mentioned the bulking up quality of confidence, often that's covering over a sense of not having confidence, right? So we puff ourselves up, or we use the feedback from the world to aggrandize our situation, to puff ourselves up. And that's covering over the fact that we're very uneasy. We feel very uneasy. And these days it's easy to feel uneasy, right? And there are a lot of people out there that are saying, well, you feel uneasy. We need to do this, 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 and this to have our sense of strength and confidence as a community, as a country, as a whatever you want to say. When in reality, we're talking about relating to the uneasiness and being with the uneasiness and sitting with the uneasiness. What's interesting about confidence is that this idea of having trust or being with trust does require an element of not of distrust, of healthy skepticism, because there would be no trusting if at one point we hadn't sat there and say, well, I'm not sure about this. I'm not sure about if I'm feeling this sense of confidence within myself. I'm not sure about this relationship. Do I trust this other person? Without having those questions in mind and that healthy skepticism, we can't get to true confidence, I believe. Because confidence wouldn't exist if it didn't have its counterpart. So what else? Who? Yes, please.
Really interesting that we're talking about this, because I just recently went on a hike with my 18-year-old daughter, and we were talking about the value of having confidence, but yet we were playing with the balance of confidence yet humility, and you know, just how do you find that balance with, you know, when you're trying to give your kid confidence and love, and you know, but not to overdo it, and so that you can, you know, instill the humility. But with my practice of mindfulness, I've been noticing about confidence and ego, and like quieting the ego. And I think that the unconditional confidence for me has to do with practice. You know, the more I practice, it comes with grace, and the ego quiets down, and yet there is cultivating of self-love. Mm. And I think there is value to conditional confidence, yet I think that it becomes very organic the more you practice. And the more I practice and the more I cultivate that the self-love within, that's like a much deeper, you know, organic experience.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you use the word grace, right?
Yeah.
Because what's the relationship between this idea of grace, which is something that kind of we're surrounded by, and that is almost has like this magical quality to it, that it's part of the ether. It's part of existing and in existence. And we, many of us particularly who sort of are interested in topics that are spiritual, we're like moving in the world of where is grace and when does grace happen, and you can't predict it always,
right?
You know, so that's a little bit kind of seems outside of us, but then the self-love seems to be cultivated within, mm-hmm. and yet again the two things are in relationship with each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you still want to share? Yeah.
So I just have two really quick points. The first one is that I believe there is a vast difference between conditional and unconditional.
Good.
But one relies on the other, of course, by definition. If you don't have the conditional, you can't develop the unconditional.
Okay.
The other thing that just came up in my head as I'm contemplating having a child with my partner is where the child gets the confidence from. And I think it's very complicated. I don't think it's just, okay, you're doing a great job. I think a lot of it has to do with the way that child perceives you, the parent.
Mm-hmm.
If the child perceives you, the parent, as someone with confidence, as I had two very confident parents. They were not great parents, but they were very confident parents, I can say that. And they were not always telling me that I was great. In fact, a lot came from criticism. There was a lot of criticism. What I am told by the people around me from like the age of, I think, 18, before I even knew who the hell I was, was you demand respect. And you command X, Y, and Z, or you have a lot of self-esteem. And I guess the two are related, of course. Confidence and self-esteem, you can't really have one without the other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've questioned those things in myself, but it sure as hell helped a lot.
Yeah, what was
in those times
in
to
those
remember
times,
what I was told.
What was your experience when you saw yourself or was reflected back to you that you're commanding a certain presence, you're demanding, let's say that, presence. Like, there's a certain presence about who you are and, you know, what did that feel like?
Great.
Yeah. Because, what do you think was...
Because of the models that I've had.
Right, and but within yourself, how did that, in those situations, when you had that feeling, what was great about it?
Lack of fear.
There was not so much fear, yeah.
A complete lack of fear.
Yeah. So, interesting, right, correlation to this idea of fearlessness. And these days, again, very important topic. Because there is so much sort of fear in the world. I was thinking, actually, Shambhala is an international network of meditation centers. And our youth, we have a youth collective that has chapters at many of these centers. And the name of that youth collective is called the Zijie Collective. So Zijie is a word that translates as primordial or unconditional confidence. And so what these young people, many teenagers, 20-somethings, what they do is they train in meditation. They train in exchange, sort of positive exchange with their peers, in exchanging ideas, exchanging, hearing talks, kind of touching in on wisdom tradition. And then they also engage in social action. So this idea of not giving up on anyone, and how do we actually really practice that? So these are a few, I think, components of how we can begin to think about when we feel fear and vulnerability and loneliness and sadness, and how is our meditation, how does it become an anchor for us in those moments, right? How does it become something that we can go to when we kind of feel like we can't go to anything else? I want to tell you a story. So to sort of close here, I want to share a story about the Buddha. And so many of you are familiar with the Buddha was an ascetic. He mastered many different meditation practices after he left his kingdom and his palace. He went out into the woods and he took on great teachers, meditation teachers. He mastered many of these practices. And even after he had mastered many of the practices and those teachers wanted him to become a teacher with them, he said, you know, there's still something that I'm looking for. I feel like I haven't really found what I'm looking for. So the story, as the story goes, he made a little cushion, a little seat of grass, and he sat under the Bodhi tree. And within the course, and he said, I'm not getting up until I find what I'm looking for. This is essentially enlightenment. So over the course of one night, basically the Buddha encountered many different obstacles, fears. What's that? Temptations. Thank you. Yes. Aggression came towards him. Temptation came to tempt him out of what he was trying to do. And when all of those things came at him, and the story is that they came at him, particularly the aggression, came at him like arrows, and through his composure and his meditative equipoise, or just maintaining his seat, the arrows turned into flowers, and they just dropped at his in his lap. So when the night was done, and the entity that was kind of considered the mastermind of all the obstacles, this entity's name is Mara. So Mara is kind of the enemy in this case. So Mara came and said, okay, you survived. And everything that we threw at you, you survived. More than survived, you're actually thriving. You have your total wakefulness and sanity. But Mara said, well, how can you prove it? Who's your witness? I mean, yes, I see you here, and I see the evidence of it, and you say that you've woken up and that you will never go back into confusion again in your life. But how can you prove it? And does anybody know what the Buddha did at that moment? Yeah. So there's sometimes you'll see pictures of the Buddha with one hand like this and the other hand touching the ground. And the Buddha said, the earth is my witness. So essentially what he was saying was that the earth and the universe, by extension, the earth has confidence in me. Unshakable, unconditional confidence. Okay, my friends. Thank you very much. Have a nice evening.
Thanks for listening. As always, our podcast happens every week. Tell your friends. Visit our website, ny.shambhala.org, for more information about classes and weekend retreats. Again, David Perrin is teaching a workshop on the evening of Wednesday, October 26th, called Learn to Live in the Moment. So you can check that out if you like what you heard here. And email us at podcast@shambhalanyc.org. Your questions, comments, suggestions, moments of unbridled, unconditional confidence. We always love to hear those. Thanks for listening. Later.